you're probably thinking, wait a minute, Christmas is over. Why are we still doing Christmas? The video has a Christmas backdrop, but this isn't a Christmas sermon. I'd like to tell you it's a kids' sermon, but we kept our kids up here not because this is a kids' sermon, but because you're sort of the subject of the sermon. This is actually a vision sermon. It has everything to do with where do we go next. So for those of you who ditched our hot chocolate thing and you've never seen Polar Express, let's finish up talking about the movie. Last week I left you with Chris, and he asked Santa for a bell from the sleigh. The bell can actually only be heard by those who truly believe. Chris puts the bell in his pocket. Unfortunately, his pocket has a hole in it, and he loses the bell. However, Santa finds it on his sled, and on the seat of his sled, and delivers it to Chris, and his sister Sarah are ringing this bell. But did you notice something? His parents cannot hear the bell. They look at the bell and they say it's a pretty beautiful bell, but they also label it as broken because they can't hear it. In the narration, Chris points out that his sister and friends would eventually stop hearing the bell. However, Chris also points out it never stops ringing for him. And that brings us to what we're going to try to look at for our 2025 vision, as we're going to call it. And our theme this coming year is going to be becoming better followers. I mean, that's kind of generic. There's a lot of things that we can talk about when we talk about becoming a better follower. And when we talk about becoming a better follower, I've got a concern. And it's a concern that I have with myself and with a lot of people. And it's kind of the way that we look at our faith. We spend a lot of time making our faith look good, don't we? We paint the walls a little bit and we hang up some new curtains. And maybe we even go buy some new furniture just so our faith looks good. The problem is not that our faith doesn't look good, but I'm awful concerned about the foundation. You know, you can make a house look beautiful, but if the foundation is cracked, then how much is the house really going to last? It's not. Because the foundation is the important part of the house. And it's the important part of our faith. Therefore, this year, we are going to focus a lot of time strengthening belief. Hence the reason, a study about how to go about understanding and even defending your faith, called an apologetic study. You're going to see this all throughout our sermons as we go through the year, because I think that as we continue to try to make our faith look good, unfortunately, the message that our faith is supposed to represent begins to fade. Until at some point, faith gets so abstract and subjective that, well, we can't even hear the message anymore. To put it plain and simple, the bell just stops ringing for us, folks. Our beliefs, those things that we say we believe in, they become kind of muddy. They become kind of, well, you know, it's subjective. I can put my opinion into this somewhere. We've heard all the stories and all the lessons so many times. They're just white noise. I mean, let's face it, we can start filling in the blanks before the ministry even starts preaching these days, because we've heard it all. Thus, for 2025, we want to consider not giving ourselves a fresh start, but a strengthened foundation by the end of the year. So today, we're going to kind of finish up our Christmas story, and I don't mean the one, the baby in the manger. Well, maybe I do, although he's not going to quite be in the manger anymore. Now, we want to finish up the fact that Jesus' idea was never to make it to a manger. His idea was a mission. So if you would like to, go ahead and grab a Bible and pull out the Bible and turn to Luke chapter 2. And I'm going to be in a part of the Christmas story that usually we leave out. Yeah, we get the shepherds and we get Mary and Joseph to Bethlehem, and eventually the wise men make it there and they give their gifts, and there's a star and there's a baby. I don't know if there was a donkey or not. The Bible never says it. Of course, it never says Mary wore clothes, and I'm assuming she did that too. So maybe she rode a donkey, maybe she didn't. I don't know. But unfortunately, these two characters who are very important to the Christmas story, and maybe you've never heard their story before. Well, they're important. Luke chapter 2, verses 20 through 24, it just is about life goes on. On the eighth day, when it was time to circumcise the child being Jesus, he was named Jesus. And the name the angel had given to him before he was conceived. Jesus was presented in the temple, and when the time came for purification rites required by the law of Moses, Joseph and Mary took him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord, as is written in the law of the Lord. Every firstborn male is to be consecrated to the Lord, and to offer a sacrifice in keeping with what it is in the law of the Lord, a pair of doves and two young pigeons. So let's just put this into our manger scene timeline, because Jesus has been born for about a week. He's about 8 days old, and I'm going to go on an assumption here. They're not living in a stable, okay? I don't know whether it was a stable or a cave or what it looked like, but they're not there anymore. My guess is they probably moved in with a relative. Maybe they found an apartment. Maybe the innkeeper decided to give them a room, right? But they're not living there anymore in the stable. The shepherds have come and went, and well, the crowd that was there for tax time, much like the one at Disney World, all gone home, right? They're not there anymore. It's quite possible our poor guys, the wise men, they still are on the road somewhere. We don't know exactly at what point they showed up, but it is very possible they're still a couple years down the road before they're ever going to make their appearance. And really, when you begin to think about this lesson, it's kind of boring, because you know what's got to happen now? Policies and procedures. When Caleb and Benjamin were born, there were things that they made us do before they would let us leave the hospital and take them home, which sounds kind of weird. They're our kids, right? So we should be able to take them home whenever, but that's not the way it works when you have kids. They had to get their footprints and handprints done. They had their birth certificate that had to be issued. A Social Security card application was filled out before we even left the hospital these days. The doctors gave them a checkup to make sure they were all good. They also gave Mom a checkup to make sure Mom was all good. And while we were sort of ready to go and we had to wait for them to actually issue those discharge papers, this is all quite normal if you have a kid. And well, we need to realize that there were just some normal things that had to happen to Jesus before he became the person that we think about. He had to receive his name officially. So unlike in our culture, the baby comes out and they look at Mom and Dad and say, what do you want to name him? And we blurt out the name, or maybe we've had some kind of party to say what the name is going to be, and everybody knows what's going to be beforehand. That's not the way it worked back then. Much like in Luke chapter 1, verses 59 through 63, there would have been a gathering of the family, and they would have named the baby there with their family, and that was how the name was given. So that still needed to be done. So at the manger, they didn't call his name Jesus. He was just baby. The name Jesus would have been publicly announced 8 days later. Well, sometime between that first week, after the family had gathered. Not only did he have to officially name his name, he had to get circumcised. Now, this is a procedure they do in the hospital these days if you're going to get your baby circumcised. In those days, the priests got to do the circumcised, and I am so happy that is not a duty to pass on to pastors. I'm not interested. But Jesus was a Jewish baby. Therefore, it was required that he get circumcised. Being a firstborn son, he had to be officially presented, as you see in Exodus chapter 13, verses 11 through 13. So he had to be taken out there and say, this is the firstborn son of the family. And this is an important moment. Because you know what the firstborn son is, right? The owner of everything else. Whoever gets presented as the firstborn son, if something happens to dad, notice I didn't say mom and dad, if something happens to dad, the firstborn son gets everything. There's no splitting it amongst the other relatives. Firstborn son gets it all. So whoever gets presented as the firstborn son, he's got the birthright of everything. And so Jesus had to have that done. He was a firstborn son. And well, much like Deb had to get a checkup before we came home, there was something that needed to be done for Mary. According to Leviticus chapter 12, verses 6 through 8, Mary had to go to the temple and offer a sacrifice for herself. Now, we know the wise men hadn't shown up yet because they weren't rich. So they got to put the poor man's sacrifice out there, two turtle doves, two pigeons, and that was the sacrifice that was offered. I often wonder if that's where they got it for the 12 days of Christmas, right? Two turtle doves. How many turtle doves? That's right, three turtle doves. Okay, forget it. I don't know the song. But here's the thing. I want you to understand that for the most part, Jesus was considered just a normal baby. There were probably many babies that went in and out of that temple every single day, except on Sabbath. I mean, it was like having a hospital ward in your church. So babies were coming in and out, and all of these things had to be done because the priest had responsibilities in all of this. But we want to remember something. Although he was a normal baby, he was also extremely unique. Water break. See, I'm trying to save my voice. I make it to the end of my sermon here. So this is what we find out in Luke chapter 2. We're back over where I asked you to turn. I'm now in verses 25 through 38. And this is Jesus' experience at the temple. Now there was a man in Jerusalem called Simeon who was righteous and devout. He was waiting for the consecration of Israel, and the Holy Spirit was on him. It had been revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he would not die before he had seen the Lord's Messiah. Moved by the Spirit, he went into the temple courts. When his parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him what was custom of the law required, Simeon took him in his arms and praised God, saying, Sovereign Lord, as you have promised, you may now dismiss your servant in peace. For my eyes have seen your salvation, which you have prepared in the sight of all nations, a light for revelation to the Gentiles and the glory of your people Israel. The child's father and mother marveled at what was said about him. Then Simeon blessed them and said to Mary, This child is destined to cause the falling and rising of many in Israel, and a sign that will be spoken against, so that the thoughts of many hearts will be revealed, and a sword will pierce your own soul. There was also a prophet, Anna, the daughter of Penuel, in the tribe of Asher. She was very old. By the way, he called her old, not me, okay? She was very old. She lived with her husband 7 years after her marriage, and then was a widow until she was 84. She never left the temple, but worshiped night and day, fasting and praying. Coming up to them at that very moment, she gave thanks to God and spoke about the child to all who were looking forward to the redemption of Jerusalem. So you got to get the picture. Here's Mary and Joseph and the little baby, and they're going into the temple, and there's probably a mob and a crowd and people there doing this, and they're coming in, and before they even get to the priest, they meet these two people. So I know she's mentioned second in the story, but ladies go first, right? We're polite, so let's just take a moment to talk about Anna. She was a prophet. Wait a minute. What does that mean? Well, a prophet is regarded as a person inspired to teach and proclaim, a proclaimer of God's will. So here's a lady that God had given the gift not to prophesy, but as a prophet. And, well, I didn't write the book, but it says she was advanced in years. So she's 84 years old. I am not calling 84-year-olds old. All right, so if you're 84 today, you can go fuss at John. I mean, you can fuss at Luke. I didn't write it, but it says that she's old. And it also says she's a widow, and it sounds kind of weird because it says she lived with her husband 7 years, and then she was widowed. And I don't know exactly how long it was that she lived, but she had a 7-year marriage, and then her husband passed away. And so Anna has been living as a prophet kind of on her own. And she was a worshiper, and she seemed to live at the temple for some reason. I mean, it says she never left. Now, that one I can identify. You know, never leaving the church. I feel that sometimes I live here, and I know there are others that feel the same way, that you live here. But this lady literally sort of lived at the temple. She was always available. And what did she do? Well, she worshiped. But it says she prayed and she fasted. So this was her ministry. She was a prayer and a faster. And she's 84 years old. And the thing is that when she saw Jesus, she acknowledged Jesus and spoke of his mission. 84 years old. You know, I know what I named, I did the sermon title of this, for this particular sermon, but I really, really, really wanted to make the sermon title, Vision is for Old People Too. She had a vision. She was looking for the Messiah. She was looking for God. And of course, that brings us to Simeon. And like Anna, he was elderly. We don't get to find out how old he is, but he was elderly. And this old man, not my term, this old man has some characteristics about him. They called him righteous and devout, which means acting according with divine or moral law, free from guilt or sin. To be devout means to pursue belief in a mode or behavior. And the weird thing about Simeon is he got a promise from God. He got a promise that he doesn't die until the Messiah, which was Jesus, shows up. Now, I don't know whether that was a good promise or a bad promise. It seemed to me that he was rather happy to see Jesus. He's like, okay, I saw him. It's time to go home. But do you understand? Here was this old man, and he was looking for, he knew what he was looking for, a little baby. He wasn't out on the hillside looking for a soldier. He wasn't looking for a government. He wasn't looking for a king. He knew where he was supposed to be. And he put himself in the optimal place to find exactly what God had said. He was standing there at the temple. Why at the temple? Because every single baby that was ever born is going to come through that temple if they're a boy. They have to. So he put himself in a position to find Jesus. And you know what? When the time was right, he allowed God to move him. I mean, he just happens at that moment that as they're bringing Jesus in, it says he gets up and he allowed God to say, hey, Simeon, wake up. Hey, nap time's over. Here he comes. And he allowed God to move him into the temple. And he took hold of and he praised God. Now, I do want you to get this picture because we wouldn't like this today. Here's Mary and Joseph, and they're bringing a newborn baby in. And here comes this old man that has been at this temple for all these years. And he comes up and says, can I hold the baby? Yeah, okay. Young parents, what are you going to tell them? Not a chance. But he reaches out and he takes hold of Jesus. And he says, Sovereign Lord, you have promised you may now dismiss your servant in peace. I got him. This is him. This is the one I've been waiting for. I am done, for my eyes have seen your salvation, which you have prepared in the sight of all nations, a light for revelation to the Gentiles. Wow. Before Paul even got here, somebody else knew this was a message for all people, not just the Jews, and the glory of your people, Israel. Then he turns to the parents and he offers them a little bit of encouragement. The child's father and mother are marveled at what was said about him. Then Simeon blessed them. So I want to turn my attention to those of you who are, we'll call you older, okay? Could you even imagine what this meant to Mary and Joseph? They are not the 20-some-year-old, 30-some-year-old young adults that we see in all the picture books. Joseph was probably between the ages of 14 and 16, and Mary between the ages of 12 and 14. Wow. Their cheering crowd had all gone home. Keep in mind, the cynics and their family still had their questions about this baby and how it got here. I mean, virgin birth? Angels? You're kidding, right? Folks, they were just two kids starting out in their marriage. Young but strong in their faith. They had a newborn baby to take care of. By the way, this baby was the Son of God. Of course, Simeon just didn't stop with his blessing. He also gave them a little bit about Jesus' mission. This child is destined to cause the falling and rising of many in Israel and will be a sign that will be spoken against so that thoughts of many hearts will be revealed. And a sword will pierce your own soul too. In other words, this is going to be hard. And I know what you're thinking. Why on earth, Barry, would you choose to stop here to start a brand new year? I mean, Happy New Year, right? Why do you want to start here? And this has a lot to do with why we kept the kids upstairs today. Because we are what most people call a donut church. This has absolutely, positively nothing to do with first Sundays of the month. Okay, that's not the donut. It means that a great majority of our adults, as you look across today, and even when everybody's here, are 55 and above. Go ahead, look around. Look at the adults, 55 and above. However, God has blessed us in the fact that the other half of our church is age 20 and below. It's kind of funny. We are the perfect donut church because we have a hole right in the middle of our church. We are missing a lot of the age ranges of 20s, 30s, and 40s. We have a few. But just look around. It's not our strong suit, is it? I mean, that's the one that's hard for us because 20, 30, and 40, we don't have a lot of them. And so it kind of leaves a hole. I mean, they're not totally missing, but they're here. And folks, we've spent 12 weeks discussing disciple making and proper church growth, and the thing that we are calling never ends, this thing that we call our mission is a never-ending growth opportunity. We're never supposed to stop. But this gets hard for a church like ours. Because as we get old, okay, I am going to turn 57 this year. So that means for a few of you, I am old enough to be your granddad. For a few of you, I am old enough to be your dad. But for a few of you, I'm young enough to be your son. Just remember that. But as we get old, our faith often sort of gets the all-done attitude. I mean, just don't have the energy I used to have anymore. And you're probably thinking, if this is you with less energy, I don't want to know you when you had all of your energy. No, you do not, okay? But as you get older, you begin to lose your energy. Perhaps you even begin to get the feeling that your mission's all done. And you even put the thing in neutral and you're just trying to coast to the finish line. Come on, Jesus, you got to get back here before that, you know, hurry up, I'm done. And you're just ready. And today's message, I bring you to the characters of Simeon and Anna because maybe you even sort of feel like you're an afterthought at this point. Your main story has been told, right? You've been there, done that. You got a lot of memories. I mean, these two were just two old people sitting in a temple waiting to die, right? Absolutely, positively not. Nothing can be further from the truth. They, my friends, are as much a part of the Christmas story as the shepherds and wise men. Because you know what? They represent those that they did not represent those that just found out about Jesus, but those that knew he was coming and were looking forward to it. What a difference. These two people were not ones that found out that night, oh my gosh, the baby's been born, and went running to a manger. These two people were two individuals that had lived their entire life looking and waiting and hoping and anticipating for the arrival of the Messiah. Is that you? I mean, it means all the difference in the world and how we are looking at things. Because when they saw him, they rejoiced. They were excited. She's 84 years old. And she's still worshiping night and day. She's still praying. She's still fasting. It says Simeon was elderly. And he still has great anticipation for Jesus. And as I look across our congregation with our hole in the middle of our donut that we are trying to close up, you understand, until we get the hole filled, it is up to the older members of our church to take care of the backside of the donut. And it doesn't matter how old you are. You could be 84. Or 64, or 54. As the hole begins to close up, maybe it'll be 44, 34. But it is our responsibility as the older parts of our body to reach out into the younger parts of our body and make it one. Isn't that amazing? Our responsibility. In other words, our vision doesn't work unless vision is for old people too. If you can't catch the vision, even at the young age of 84, by the way, I'd like to remind you, that makes them 15 years younger than Sarah was when she had Abraham. So technically, you're not even done childbearing years yet, okay? But if you can't catch the vision at 84, then how are we ever going to inspire our kids to catch the vision at their age? Because right now, we're the adults that they see. We're the ones that they're looking at when they come in the building. We're the ones that are supposed to be taking hold of their lives. We're the ones that are supposed to be encouraging them. Because you know what? Right now, this is what we got. And I think a lot of churches struggle with this. And unfortunately, we get the idea that, well, we can't grow until we get some younger people in here. That isn't what Anna and Simeon thought. You can't grow until your older people take on the mission. So what am I asking from you? Well, it's kind of really simple. Prophesy. Speak clear about what God is in your life. Don't let them doubt about it. Talk to them about God. Explain things about God. Ask them questions about God. Be prepared to have them ask you questions about God. What am I asking from you? Worship God, being persistent and consistent. You want to set a good example for our younger generation? Show up. You see the commercials all over the places about foster parents needing the fact they just want parents that will show up. You realize that's what we need in our church? We need adults that are willing to put in the effort persistently, but also consistently. It means not only do you just show up, they begin to look at your life and they see your life as an example. Kids are not looking for somebody that can be like them. They're looking for somebody they can be like. They want to see your persistence and your consistency. They need a model to look at. Pray and fast, not for the next generation, but with the next generation. I think a lot of times we did prayer time all wrong this past year. Because out of the 12 ones that we did, we only had the kids up here for two. I'm starting to feel a little guilty about that because you know what? Our kids don't need to hear that we're praying for you. They need to see that we're praying for them. They need to see our commitment to their life. Live lives that are righteous and devout, being an example and demonstration for those behind you. A lot of times we get very, 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 very obsessed with where we are right now. And you understand, that's not what this is about. I mean, I'm 57. I have no idea how long God's going to leave me on this planet. Some of you are older than me, and maybe you're busy doing other things that retired people do. Do you understand? The mission hasn't ended just because you reached your Social Security check. God's retirement plan is in heaven, and you ain't there yet. Therefore, this idea of strengthening our foundation, vision is for old people too. Hold tight to Jesus and the promises God has given, but at the same time, allow God's Spirit to move you into action. It's okay to know your chapter and verse, but we need to see that chapter and verse begin to become manageable actions in our church. And I hate to tell you this. Maybe I really want to tell you this. It's up to us. Because we don't have a bunch of 20 and 30-somethings that are going to come walking in the door at the start of the new year. This is who we are. And it's time that we understand this is who we are. You know what? If we're going to be the donut church, we want to be the sweetest donut out there. We want to be as complete as we possibly can be. Offer encouragement, not just advice. We like to offer advice. We like to tell kids, this is how it should be done. You know, when I was young, this is how it worked. They need some encouragement because their time is different than our time. They need to know they have a place that they can come, a foundation that they can hold tight to. But most importantly, I want you to speak often of Jesus, his mission, and everything that you encounter. That's what we need to do. And I want you to go back to that clip. The kids could hear the bell. The parents can't. If we fail to embrace the mission, then the bell is going to go silent for another generation. Someday, we're going to be asking them about Jesus, and they're going to, I just can't hear it anymore. Maybe I can, because you know what? I grew up with this stuff. I had lots of people in my life that kept that bell ringing all throughout my years. It's our job. It's our responsibility not to let the bell go silent. Of course, there's only one way the bell doesn't go silent, because the bell only rings for those who truly believe.